Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks. It's that time of year when a bunch of important things have a tendency to get decided really quickly on Beacon Hill, as state lawmakers scramble toward their seven-week holiday break.
You've probably heard about the casino bill that's in final negotiations, but here's one you might not have heard of. A crime bill that would make dramatic changes to the way criminals are sentenced in Massachusetts.
And it all goes back to last winter, when a repeat violent offender named Dominic Sinelli got out of jail on parole and shot and killed a Woburn police officer. And the fallout that from that incident has included the resignation of the entire state parole board and now this bill, which, among other things, would automatically deny parole to anyone convicted of a third violent felony, at least one from a list of felonies that lawmakers have deemed to be sufficiently serious.
In other states, they call this kind of thing three strikes and you're out. And it's caused major budgetary headaches for states like California, where prison overcrowding is a critical problem.
And yet the Massachusetts bill passed the state Senate unanimously last week, and now heads to the House with a lot of momentum behind it.
State Senator Bruce Tarr co-sponsored the bill, and Adam spoke with him just a few moments ago.
Senator Tarr, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's great to be back with you.
There are a number of components to this very, very large, very complex bill, but first I'd like you to explain the nature of your support for the one that we just highlighted, automatically denying parole to anyone convicted of a third violent felony. Why do we need to do that?
Because there should be no room in our parole system for folks who have made repeat violent offenses to have the opportunity to victimize someone else. And it's important to understand that these are not people who simply made a mistake. These are people who have repeatedly victimized the citizens of the Commonwealth. They've demonstrated a propensity for recidivism, and we shouldn't allow them to have the opportunity to victimize someone ever again.
That said, you've heard the concern about our ability to afford imprisoning all of these people. One of the many components of this bill is one that would actually lower the mandatory minimum sentences for certain drug crimes and expand parole eligibility for all nonviolent drug criminals. So is it your belief that if we hang on to some violent offenders in the prison system and let go some nonviolent offenders, that our total prison population would essentially stay the same?
Well, I don't think it would stay the same. In fact, I think the number of folks that would benefit from the provisions that would create sooner parole eligibility for those serving a minimum mandatory sentence and some of the statutory good time in the bill would actually outnumber those that would be retained as a result of the provisions for multiple life sentences and three-time violent offenders. I actually don't think that we should have included those provisions that you made reference to. I don't think that by cracking down on a set of individuals who are clearly a threat to society, that we should have to compensate in the other direction. And when it comes to the cost of things, I don't think we can put a price tag on public safety, and I don't think we should be suggesting that this is a balancing act. It's not that at all. When I and Senator Bedore and others originally filed the bill that led to this legislation, we were trying to address a very specific problem. And I think we could have addressed that problem without those additional elements of the bill. However, in order to be able to move forward and take what is clearly necessary action, we were willing to make some concessions, even though we don't necessarily agree with them.
And you're a Republican, and the bill that you put together ultimately received unanimous support in the state Senate, which, as we know, is a Democratic-dominated body, and that says a lot for the amount of support behind this combination of provisions. Senator Tarr, let me just ask you this. Ultimately, isn't the idea of parole to give a group of people in whom our society has some trust, the parole board, and allow them to make a judgment call about whether or not someone is capable of rejoining society? And aren't you taking that away?
Well, number one, the courts have indicated that parole is given by the grace of government. It's not something that anyone is entitled to. And in fact, as you know, in the federal system, there is no parole whatsoever. There's a formula that dictates if someone's sentence can be reduced based on their behavior in prison. Number two, the trust in that group of individuals to whom you referred was violated in a very high-profile case case with regard to the release of Dominic Sinelli. It also was violated with regard to the murderer of Melissa Gosul, and there have been other incidents in between those two bookends. So clearly the trust has been eroded, and we need to do something to rebuild that trust, to rebuild the integrity of the system. And lastly, but not least, parole should be reserved for those folks in whom we have some belief there can be rehabilitation without an undue risk to society. But in the case of the two groups of individuals we're talking about in this bill, they've clearly demonstrated their disregard for the public safety of others and for the law. And so for this group, not for every group, we're saying that parole should be unavailable and beyond their reach.
Senator Bruce Tarr, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you again.
Now, in spite of all that legislative support for this crime bill, it does have its opponents, including the Mass Bar Association and our next guest, Leslie Walker, executive director of the nonprofit Massachusetts Prisoners Legal Services. Welcome back, Leslie.
Thank you.
The email that I've seen circulating around the opponents of this bill has the subject line, disaster, exclamation point. Explain what you see as being disastrous here.
Massachusetts already has some of the most overcrowded prisons in the country. MCI Concord, in the town of Concord, is at 212% of its design capacity. The waiting trial unit at MCI Framingham is at 350% of its design capacity, and the counties are even more overcrowded than the Department of Correction. Jamming more people into those buildings is just going to put a tremendous stress on the system. And what we know works, has worked in other states, is the exact opposite of what Massachusetts is doing. States like Texas and Mississippi and South Carolina have looked at exactly the situations, crime rates, overcrowding costs, runaway costs, mm-hmm. and have done thoughtful, deliberative measures. I agree with Representative Dempsey in today's Globe that we need to slow the bus down and look at this and see what other states have done that is successful in actually reducing crime. Three strikes bills have increased crime in other states, and many states are getting rid of them. Massachusetts enacting one is in the opposite direction.
That said, this is not a three strikes and you're out bill like we know in California. It does not necessarily sentence three-time offenders to jail for life. It just makes them ineligible for parole, and it only applies to certain violent crimes. And we're talking about very, very serious crimes. Why does it not make sense to apply this this set of sentencing guidelines or regulation to a very constrained set of the most serious crimes?
Well, Adam, initially, the list is not only serious crime. It's a thoughtful list. There are some very serious crimes on that list. However, there are also crimes like assault and battery and assault and battery dangerous weapon, which can be a shod foot. So let's take the example of an Iraqi vet suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Okay.
Who's drinking, self-medicating. He gets in a fight. First time he gets a small sentence, second time he gets a small sentence, the third time he gets in a bar fight when he's a substance abuser, he can go to prison for the rest of his natural life. Do we want 23-year-old veterans in prison for the rest of their natural life at $46,000 a year?
Sure, but ultimately, that veteran in your hypothetical situation would not have access to parole upon his third offense. But there'd still be a judge who would have who would be able to exercise his own judgment in terms of assigning a sentence to the
not under this bill. Not as I understand it.
Okay.
If you're convicted for the third time of any of the over 60 felonies on this bill, you'll be sentenced to natural life without parole. Some of those are very serious felonies. But the problem with the bill, from what I see it, is that we are repeating what California does. California did have many more felonies. You're right about that. We have 60-odd. California had their entire penal code counting as a felony. At one point, there were 40,000 people in California serving life sentences on the three strikes you're out. But Massachusetts does not spend money. We know on programming. We know that 80% of prisoners report substance abuse and alcohol issues as they enter prison. Right now, the department doesn't have the money to do what they would like to do, which is only spend 2.4% of their budget on programming and treatment. What we need to do is what other states are doing, which is slow down, look at this, treat and train people who go in the first time so they don't come back a second time or a third time instead of just locking them up and throw away the key forever.
As we mentioned, this bill has a lot of other components to it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to just list some of them. Between 9 months and 2 years of post-release supervision for mm-hmm. state prisoners, mm-hmm. Increased penalties for certain kinds of domestic violence, gun crimes, strangulation, ordering a hit. It also updates the state's law against wiretapping to include things mm-hmm. like text messaging.
Mm-hmm.
All strike me as reasonably uncontroversial proposals. Do you see any other concerns here?
I don't think the people sending you emails that say disastrous in the line are talking about those proposals. There are some thoughtful, logical proposals, but any bill that creates new mandatory minimum sentences in a system that is as overcrowded as Massachusetts is and does not grant parole eligibility to drug offenders in a reasonable portion of their sentence, nonviolent drug offenders, is a step backwards in time and a step towards increasing taxes, building new prisons, and wasting taxpayer dollars on a system we know doesn't work because other states have looked at it and said, this does not work. In Massachusetts, the recidivism rate has increased in the last years of tough-on-crime measures since the 90s, from 39% to 44%. That's evidence right there that what we're doing is not working. This bill makes it worse.
That said, we just heard from Senator Bruce Tarr say that he does not think that this bill will increase in a result in an increase in the prison population because of these accompanying provisions that loosen mandatory minimums on drug crimes. Is this just a case of you two having conflicting sets of facts?
I think it's a case of me not knowing what Mr. Tarr is relying on for facts. I was very disappointed to see in the debate last Thursday afternoon not one question asked by a senator about costs. Perhaps all those costs have been discussed in caucuses and in bill preparation. I do not know that. But the runaway costs and the lack of public safety in this bill is stunning. And I think that's what your readers or your listeners, rather, are talking about when they say this is a disastrous bill. I would like very much to have someone in the legislature, and I think the House is about to do this, ask the Department of Correction. We know of the 11,000 prisoners, half of them now are serving violent felonies. So that's a lot of people. That's over 5,000 people that could be subject to a three strikes at some point in time. It's getting at a horrible problem, horrible homicides, with a hammer instead of a scalpel.
Well, we know that there are a lot of proponents behind this bill who are hoping to see it rushed through by Wednesday, which is when the state legislature is hoping to conclude business for the holidays. That may or may not happen, and we'll keep our listeners apprised. Leslie Walker, Executive Director of the nonprofit Massachusetts Prisoners Legal Services, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up next, the move to ban early elective deliveries. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.